Welcome to episode 4 of the Filmmaker Film Watcher podcast. I'm filmmaker Rich DiGregorio.
And I'm film watcher Greg Ralph. And we're continuing season 2, and today's topic is modern musicals.
Modern musicals. So this is a modern take on the classic musical tradition.
And now, like The Marriage Vow for Brian Ferry, musicals are very sacred to me, Ricardo. And
yeah, I want to make sure
that you're qualified to have this discussion.
No, absolutely.
So I've put together a little game just to check out where you are with these, but I choose to call musical credentials.
Oh, give me a break.
So what I'm going to do is I've got lyrics from 10 well-known musicals.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I am musically serious. And I'm going to ask you to name the musical. I'll give you a score, but I'll reveal the answers at the end so our listeners can also ponder it across the podcast. So are you ready?
I'm ready. This is going to be...
no pre-warning whatsoever.
This is going to be quite interesting. Okay.
I'll start with an easy one.
Go for it.
What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again.
I'm happy again. Singing in the Rain.
This could take up the whole podcast. Okay, next one. Everything free in America for a small fee in America.
I have no idea.
Okay. There's plastic on the furniture to keep it neat and clean in the pine soul scented air somewhere that's green.
Oklahoma. I don't know.
I thought I was doing Oklahoma, but no, it's not on this list. Nothing comes from nothing, nothing ever could. So somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done something good.
Oh, I know that one. No, I don't.
You should know
I have
that
no
one.
Idea.
Okay. Next one. Going so well here.
This is going great. That's it. That's the end of the podcast. I don't think I've got any credentials.
Number five of ten. Have you heard It's in the Stars? Next July, we collide with Mars.
I have no idea.
Okay. Let's see if you get this one. Toucha, toucha, toucha me. I want to feel dirty.
Oh, the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Somehow I knew that you would know that one.
But the way you said that then, I mean, seriously.
Oh,
toucha, toucha,
well,
toucha
me. Otherwise, the segment would have been going, everything free in America, and you might have got it. But I'm just reading these out. Number, what are you up to? Number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. We could have been anything that we wanted to be, but don't it make your heart glad that we decided a fact we take pride in to become the best at being bad?
Oh, I have absolutely no idea.
It's part of your heritage, that one. Okay. Number 8. Luck, if you've ever been a lady to begin with...
Oh, Luck Be a Lady Tonight.
Please be a lady tonight.
It's a Luck Be a... I know the song. It's Guys and Dolls.
Second last one. When Dukes and Maharajas pass the time of day with me... I say me special word, and then they ask me out to tea.
Maharaja? Moulin Rouge.
Lucky last. One man in a million may shout a bit. Now and then there's one with slight defects. One perhaps whose truthfulness you doubt a bit, but by and large we are a marvellous sex.
I don't know.
No, you got 3 out of 10.
That's
we'll come back to
okay,
that.
Okay, so my credentials are low with musicals. You know that, and I'm not a massive, you know.
So I'm not going to listen to a word you say now.
Okay.
And if you're listening, ignore him too, okay? Well, all right, shall we talk about our first film?
I think so.
I've had that little detour.
Okay, so the films we're talking about tonight is the last 5 years, modern musicals. The last 5 years, which was a 2014 film, Dancer in the Dark from the year 2000, and...
La La Land, which, shock horror, is actually on at the movies as we speak.
Wow. So, Greg, tell us about the last 5 years.
Boy meets girl. Boy and girl fall in love and marry. Boy and girl discover that married life is not a bed of roses and that problems arise. Boy and girl separate. All while singing songs. So while that may not sound terribly original, the conceit of this 2014 film is that he tells their story chronologically, from their first glorious night together through to their final separation, whereas she tells it backwards. The result is that as one narrative stream gets sunnier, the other gets bleaker. So that we're always moving between contrasts in this musical deconstruction of the arcs of a relationship. Kathy, the actress, Anna Kendrick, and Jamie, the novelist, Jeremy Jordan, are our protagonists. They mostly sing alternating solos with duets in the middle for their marriage and at the end for their final separation. They have very little spoken dialogue, so that this seems more like an opera than a musical. And any other characters are pretty much incidental. This reflects the original 2001 Two Hander show that was written by Jason Robert Brown following the end of his own marriage. It has since been performed off-Broadway and around the world and seems to have had a dedicated fan base before it was filmed. So, Ricardo, what did you think of the last 5 years?
Oh, well, therein lies the problem. It was a theatre show before it was a film, and it felt like I was watching theatre. Look, you know, some parts worked. I don't think a lot did. I think that the structure was very inventive and really good to do, but I don't think it worked that well. I didn't really feel for anybody that much at all, really. And the music itself sounded the same in every song.
Really?
I think it was all the same. I think it sounded like I was listening to the same song. I think, you know, I think Anna Kendrick's voice is awesome, but how many long notes do we need?
And which song was that?
All of them. All of them.
Mr. Schmuel?
Oh, my goodness me. I mean, it starts off, you know, with her sad in her apartment. I know it's the end of the relationship and whatnot. She's there. She's talking about Jamie. I have no idea who Jamie is. There's no connection at all with what I'm looking at, except for seeing a woman cry talking about this guy, Jamie. I didn't feel anything for that. And it just kept going throughout the movie. And again, with the music being the same, there was one scene which changed. Although by the river or by
the lake in Ohio. Yep. And then down by the banks of the Ohio.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They're singing, and it was, you know, again, she's singing the song and he's looking and listening to her. And then suddenly it just changes and she becomes angry at him, and then it works. I was like, oh wow, okay, this is great. Okay, I hope it continues like this. But then it just continued being the same and the same. The next one was samey again. And seriously, the story when he tells her when she's having a bad day is so long. It goes on forever.
Which song's that?
When she's having a bad day, and he's talking about, he says a story
about the dressmaker. Old Schmuel.
Oh my goodness me! And then even she says, you know, I think she says, but it doesn't stop. This is going on too long. Even she says it, and it keeps going and going. Look, you know, it was okay. I was a bit bored. I didn't hate it as much as you, I'm probably sounding like I hated it, but
it sounds like you hated it.
No, I didn't. It was okay, but I just didn't feel for anything. I didn't feel for the characters. I didn't feel for their relationship. I really didn't feel sad for their demise. I didn't, you know, feel for her that much. I didn't feel for him, and to me, that's not great.
Well, my experience of the film is probably almost completely opposite to yours. Now, it's the first time you've seen it.
Yeah,
I went to see it because I'd heard about the. I read a review, I think, when it came out a couple of years ago, of the interesting structure where, you know, you get one forward and one backward. I thought, oh, I'm curious about this. So I did know about that beforehand. And I went to see it and I really liked it. But I went with two friends who didn't really like it. And when we came out, we were talking about it afterwards. One of them said, it took me a while to work out what was going on. And then I realised, oh, yeah, she's really needy. Mm. And I actually think that's a flaw of the film that I'll come back to. But having said that, and I agree with you, and I think a lot of people agree with you about the song about old Schmuel, the dressmaker. I can see what it's trying to do in the narrative kind of arc, which is, you know, she has problems, he's trying to cheer her up through whimsy and so on, but it's not great.
Yes, it's not. And, you know, I'll tell
and
you something.
And it goes on for quite a while.
Well, I was talking about this. If this was a theatre show and I was in the theatre listening to these two and watching this as a theatre show, I probably would have been moved, and I would have been, I think. It just didn't work in a cinema setting. I felt like it was just, I was watching a stage show which they were putting on and trying to make it into a movie and make it structurally different.
I didn't mind that. And I think you're right. I think the real stars of the show, I mean, I do like Anna Kendrick.
So do I. I think she's great.
She acts really well. I think her singing hits a few.
No, but I think that's the music. I don't think it's her voice.
No, I think it's both. Because I've heard other people sing some of the songs. Mm. And I think when she hits those really kind of high sustained notes, I don't think she does as well. Whereas I love Jeremy Jordan's voice, but I think she is the better actor. Mm. And I've seen him in a couple of things, musical things now. Mm. He was in a TV series called Smash, which is all about a musical about the making of a musical. And I loved his voice in that as well. So I love the music, except for Schmuel. And I love the structure, the going backwards and forwards. And I think you said last year that you once, when edited Love Actually, yes. to put the stories in sequence.
That's right.
I've now seen this twice in its, you know, intended structure. Mm. And I feel really tempted now to take it apart and put it chronologically to see how they actually move between the different relationship stages.
I think it's a nice idea to do it. But I think, you know, one thing I like about musicals, you know, I talk about not really liking musicals that much. I do like musicals, but I like them when they connect with character and when the characters are connected to what they're singing. Okay, that's what I like. And this tried to do that, but without me having any knowledge of the relationship, it was hard for me to feel about anything to do with her beginning.
There's an intellectual exercise there. Maybe that's the issue for you, in that you get to put the pieces of the jigsaw together. So as you go forward, you find out things at that stage you didn't know earlier.
Yeah, but I don't think that was interesting enough.
Well, for me it was. But I'll tell you what I think is the problem with this as a musical, let alone a film.
What is it? He's a writer, Greg. He's a writer that ends up being successful and she doesn't, and then he cheats on her and it ends up.
Yeah, but that's a fairly universal story. But
yeah, well, that's right. It's nothing new about it.
Well, I'll go back to what I said in the synopsis about the story, about the film, is that I've forgotten his name again already, but the writer of the show, who actually has a little cameo again, he's pianist when she's doing the failed audition.
Oh, right, okay.
I love those little touches, but anyway.
Actually, that was a good song, actually. I enjoyed the audition when she was talking about being neurotic, an actor.
Yeah.
That was great.
She'd been neurotic while doing the audition.
Fantastic. Yeah, that was very good. Yeah.
See, but I might come back to this as well, but I love the writing. The second time round, listening to some of the lyrics, like tuning more into it rather than the overall story, there's a lot more in there that I just love as writing in its own right, if you like. Mm. But my problem, I think, with the film is, going back to what my friend said when we first saw it, I get it, she's needy. I think that's the problem with the film. I think you find out a lot about her, but I think the story is she has problems and he can't deal with her problems.
Mm.
And the fact that the writer wrote this after his own failed marriage, he changed one of the songs to become Jamie's first song, Shiksa Goddess, after their first night, their first night together, was a different song. And his ex-wife basically went to sue him, so he changed it. So I think this is all very real and very personal for him. But when I watched the film the first time, I felt like I was watching the story of the relationship from the point of view of one of his friends. So you get a bit about, or him or Jamie himself, you get a bit about, yeah, look, I didn't do that well and I had affairs and I shouldn't have had affairs. But really the whole story feels like it's about, for me, feels like it's about the fact that she has all these, she's very needy. She has to be in every corner of his heart.
Yeah.
He can't cope with that. He wants space as a writer.
Yeah.
But he tries to make her happy through the schmool song and other things that go on. But he refuses to, he says, I refuse to fail because you can't succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There were
lots of really great lyrics in there.
Yeah. There is. And that was a good, that was interesting.
But I felt like, his issue was he couldn't deal with her issues. And I don't think that's really true of any relationship. And the second time around, the more I thought about it, the more I just feel like we really see, the film is really about her and almost him in opposition to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because the writer was basically the Jamie character.
Yeah, right.
And so I love the backwards, the forward and backward telling as a structure and putting those bits together in my own mind. I love some of the lyrics. I mean, I wrote some of them down, like, when Jamie is complaining about how needy she is, he says, all that I ask for is one little corner, one private room at the back of my heart. I tell her I found one. She sends out battalions to claim it and blow it apart. I mean, I just love that.
Yeah.
Or when she, in that song that you, I think, liked, where, she suddenly starts getting angry with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't have a problem with the shift because I thought she was trying placate him, get things back on track.
Yeah.
And then she realises he's not even going to try.
No.
And that's when she lets loose. And the line where she sings, I swear to God, I'll never understand how you can stand there straight and tall and see I'm crying and not do anything at all. Mm. I mean, the emotion in that and the cleverness of some of the lyrics, that's what really grabs me.
You know what? The lyrics are fine. I think the music was subpar.
No, I like it. And
the music itself, I just felt was very samey. I didn't connect to the music.
See, I don't think it is. So how can you call, let's put Schmall aside, because Schmall, I think, is the outlier.
Yeah.
But if you think of a song like the one No One Needs to Know, when he's confessing about, all his affairs...
Mm.
and put that up against her one about, you know, Summer in Ohio, where she's singing about all the musicals she does with the dwarf and the stripper and the snake.
I think I just sounded so samey.
No,
to
I, don't, I don't think they are.
I think they do.
Or when his second song about, you know, when he's discovering success as a novelist, and he's doing this kind of almost gospel-y song about things are going too fast. I don't think they're similar at all. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I'm not a musician, but to me, that I feel like we're kind of deliberately skipping across genre. For me, look, it's not a great film, but I find the story in the way that it's told, and I agree with you, I agree that it really is a play that's been, you know, one of those films that's a play that's stretched into the outside world, but feels like a play, and I'm okay with that, because I enjoy the musical its own right, and so far there's no other way for me to see
the
story.
I'd see the play.
Yeah, so would I. I'd like to see it done with, because as I understand it, the two characters come and go on the stage, almost like one of those clocks where...
Oh, that would be great. It would be fantastic. And I would really enjoy this story as a play. I just didn't think it worked filmically.
But anyway, what's your score for this?
I'm giving it 5.
5.
Yeah.
The 5 for?
Well, like I said, I think the performances were fine. I think that was fine. I think some of the writing was good, and I, you know, ultimately the filming of it and everything was fine as well. But you know, it wasn't a perfect film. I sort of went halfway with it.
Yeah, for me, it's a 7. You know, I don't think it's a great film, and I think there are problems with it. And I think a lot of the problems probably stem from the act of writing in response to the writer's own marriage breakdown. But as I say, there are many things about this I really like. This is a musical I bought the soundtrack to it. And I sing some of the songs, or play in the car and sing along.
Right,
you know,
okay.
I really like the
really
songs.
Love it.
But I think there are problems with telling the story as well. But, you know, I will watch this again. I know that.
Again, if I'm going to be connected with a musical, I've got to feel emotionally connected. And I didn't feel emotionally connected. I wanted to, but I didn't. I was looking forward to watching it. I was really looking forward. I love the performances. And I love Anna Kendrick. I think she's great. So, but I just didn't connect to it. And that was the problem.
Okay, now we're going to jump back a little bit in time to the turn of the millennium, 2000.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Ricardo, if you could tell us about Dancer in the Dark.
Okay. Look, Lars von Trier is a controversial filmmaker. You don't usually watch one of his films for an enjoyable night out, as most of his films deal with the dark, heartbreaking and emotional side of life. From Breaking the Waves, Antichrist, Melancholia, Nymphomaniac, The Idiots and Dogville, he's not one to shy away from taking risks with subject matter. You know, realism is his thing. He created the Dogma style of filmmaking, which is filmmaking based on traditional values of story, acting and theme, without the use of special effects or technology. His films are usually shot with low-end, handheld video cameras and natural lighting, which works well for his style of capturing this realism. Dancer in the Dark again uses this technique to tell the heartbreaking story of Selma, played ever so well by singer Bjork, who plays a factory worker who is going blind rapidly due to a genetic disorder. Selma saves over $2,000 to pay for an eye operation for her young son, which will cure him of the eye condition. If he doesn't have the operation by the time he's 13, the condition will be too advanced to stop and he'll go blind. She gets by during her day at work fantasizing about musicals. She loves them. It's here that von Trier halts the documentary handheld style to make way for choreographed song and dance numbers, all penned and sang by Bjork. The film apparently used up to 100 cameras for each musical number. They're well shot and a welcome break for the audience when they show up. And they are also a break for Selma. She feels as we do when she enters this world. When her money is stolen by a cash-strapped landlord, a policeman, well, I don't want to say too much, but it leads to violence and tragedy for poor Selma. Bjork is supported by a great cast, including Catherine Deneuve and David Morse. It's dire and a really depressing watch, but also brilliant. I mean, I felt the same way watching Breaking the Waves. You know, a brilliant film I said at the time I couldn't watch again for 2 years. Well, it's been 18 years and I still can't bring myself to watch it again. I do have a love-hate relationship with von Trier, though. He tends to love emotionally torturing women in his films, and to me it seems quite misogynistic. But whether that's the case or not, Dancer in the Dark is still a must-see. I mean, it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, Bjorn won Best Actress, and it's also, I think, the best of Lars von Trier films, in my opinion. But Greg, what did you think about this?
For anyone who lives in Australia, they would be familiar with a famous movie review couple here called Margaret and David. And this film, you are going to be Margaret and I'm going to be David. So Margaret loves this film and she loves the films of von Trier. This is the first of his films I've seen and I didn't like it in the slightest. And I'm going to have to work out how you can recompense me for the last 2.25 hours watching this film. I just did not like it. I'm interested. I didn't know that they used 100 cameras to film those musical dance numbers. And I totally disagree with you, I'm sorry, about how well shot they are. That was one of my complaints, that so often in the dance numbers, we're either really distanced from the dancers, and I don't, with one exception, I don't think we get a lot from that. I think the exception at times is the men dancing on the back of the open flatbed trucks on the train.
Yeah.
But by and large, no. I noticed in particular in the courtroom musical number.
Yes.
And I suspect it was happening earlier as well. There were some of the main, you know, dancer characters, you know, were sort of half off frame. And I felt for a musical, it was appallingly shot.
He changes the shots up, though. I mean, yes, it's appallingly shot in a way that it's done. They were all done on DV cams, like very, very low end video. Okay, so you never get sort of great cinematography with, you know, in terms of Lars von Trier films. Okay, because they're all shot on quite low end cameras. But you know, from the handheld doco style of realism which you had, it did change it up. It had static shots. It had, you know, on sticks. It set up a lot of them and jump cut it. And they were a lot more structured than the rest of the film to deal with her fantasy.
I don't care. This film lost me from the very opening moments. The shifting images on the screen.
Yeah.
During, I think the titles were happening at that stage.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not sure if they were in titles at that point. But, and I was looking and thinking, what the hell is this supposed to be? Now, in this moment, I'm thinking, oh, is that meant to be her shifting sight? I don't know, but I just sat there looking at it thinking, I don't know what this is. There are no clues. Is it meant to mean something while the overture is playing? And I was lost from the start. And then when we get into the documentary style, okay, you can go for a documentary style, but the implication of a documentary style is that there's a camera in the space observing.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to say that this is a social documentary, if you like, and that maybe, you know, Selma and the other characters had given permission to be filmed, well, yeah, that gets you to a point, but how do you then explain the murder scene? You know, no documentarian would be standing there at their camera filming that murder. So if you're going to try and make this look documentary, you've got to follow through. And I didn't like the style at all of all the cutting and by and large the acting, with one exception. I didn't care for the acting by and large at all. I thought Captain Deneuve was bad.
David Morse is okay. I mean, really, what?
The only performance I really, really liked was Siobhan Fallon.
Oh, come on. Bjork was amazing.
No,
she was phenomenal.
Every time, there were about three.
No, you can have your things about the film itself, but really gave herself to that character. That's a really...
Well, she might have given herself to that character. Doesn't mean it's a good performance.
No, it was a very good performance. I thought she was wonderful in the film. I thought she was beautiful. She was gorgeous in the movie.
There were about three times when
it was heartbreaking in the movie.
Let me finish. there were about three times when I started to actually feel sympathy for her. But when that started to develop in me, then all the jump cutting stuff that sort of said, oh, look, camera work, just took me right out of that. And so, no, I found it really hard. The only moment when I really felt anything for her, are we going to say what happens at the end of the film? That crucial moment right at the end of the film, you know what I'm referring to.
Yes, absolutely.
Was a shock, even though I actually knew it was coming. It was a shock, and I really felt that, and that was pretty much it. With the exception of Siobhan Fallon, who plays the prison guard, who I think is called Brenda.
That's right.
From the moment she appeared on screen, I was watching her and I was thinking, wow, who is this?
Yes.
And when she first came on screen, I thought, oh, maybe this is actually someone who's actually a guard, you know. And it did feel documentary-like. And then as she bonded with Bjork's character, I thought her performance was the absolute standout.
She is wonderful.
I liked the lead-in. Like, every song, except for one, I think. I can't remember which one it was.
I think they're all great.
No, I don't.
I think every one of them is great.
Sing me one of the songs.
I'm not going to sing you one of the songs. I've finally seen the movie once, or twice now. I don't know them off by heart. I enjoyed them when they were, you know.
No, I just didn't.
But they're not songs like, you know, terms of modern musical, really. They're not show dance numbers, you know.
Well, then why do the show dancing?
You know, well, It's in fantasy. She loves musicals.
Yeah, but it's shown so badly. And I don't understand, against the Dog Made Manifesto, if it's about not using special effects and natural light and so on. So when they do the musical numbers and they really pump up the saturation of the colours, does that meet the manifesto? I wouldn't have thought so. What I did like about the musical numbers, in I think every case, was the way she was led into it by percussion around her. So it was either the rattling of the cable on the flagpole, it was the sketching of the court artists in the court,
yeah, of course.
It was the marching of the feet.
Well, that's what she's hearing because she's blind. She's going
yeah,
blind.
Yeah, yeah, so that's a good point. Yeah. So the percussion of those leading the songs, I really liked that. And then the songs would start and I'd be sitting there going, nah. And I just found the shooting of it almost disrespectful of what a musical is. And I'm really staggered by what you're saying about the 100 cameras, because so I found the musical numbers distanced.
Okay.
I just didn't like it.
I thought the story was actually very well played throughout the movie. I thought the story it's a heartbreaking story. It's not an easy story to watch, but geez, he does them very well. I think, you know, yes, he does these downward spiral depressing films, you know. The Breaking the Waves does the same thing. But it's just because it's depressing and whatnot and really downbeat doesn't mean that it's not a great film. You know, I still think it's
I don't mind the depressingness of it.
Yeah.
It was the way the story was told.
I think that documentary style, I'm not a massive fan of it, okay, but I still think it worked with this film. Look, I disagree with you about Bjork. I think she's absolutely brilliant in it. She's gorgeous at the beginning, and you to see her struggle throughout this condition, and you know, she's on stage, she's going to be Maria, but then she can't even see anymore, and her struggle at the factory, she's like a angel.
I have to say, the other thing that pulled me out of the film,
Catherine Deneuve was fine. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I didn't think she was. And some of the actors clearly can't sing. Like David Morse can't sing, for example, who plays the policeman.
But it's not really about that. It's all, again, it's still all connected to character. It's still all connected to character. So I still felt it that way. I felt a lot more in this film than I did, say, the last 5 years. I mean, I felt so much more for her and for her struggles and what she was going through than any of that.
Yeah, look, I didn't. I thought there were interesting things in the film. I liked the connection with other musicals, and I don't mean just the fact they were doing Sound of Music, but the fact you had Joel Grey from Cabaret, you do have Catherine Deneuve from The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and so on. So having those little links there was good. And there were things in...
Maybe you shouldn't be watching Joel Grey in musicals.
Given Cabaret, like Cabaret and I actually knew...
4 out of 10.
I knew you'd bring that up. Yeah. Was it as high as 4?
It was 4.
No, was it? Okay, you've obviously...
Yes, I remember that.
Branded
well.
More on that
oh,
than I
yeah.
am.
Oh, yeah.
But look, there were moments in the film I thought, wow, there's real cinematic possibility going on here. So, you know, when the murder victim gets up and starts dancing with his wife...
Yeah.
While they were waiting for the police to arrive.
Yeah.
The way that as she becomes, you know, increasingly blind, she uses the rail tracks to navigate home by feeling along the edge of her foot. There was a moment when she's about to get arrested in the theatre, and it's interesting that, you know, in that scene she's being betrayed by a musical, by the
she
director,
is. Yes.
Who was actually the choreographer of the film. I don't know if you knew
oh,
that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But there were moments when they were doing that dance where a row of dancers would jump up in the air. And something about the way it was edited there, it looked like they were actually in the air and floating and going up.
Mm.
I mean, to me, that was quite striking, but it just wasn't enough against everything else in the way the story was told. And so
If you are not connecting with Bjork in this movie, you will not like this movie.
That's right.
You know, and if you didn't connect with her or didn't connect with her performance, then of course you didn't like it. I remember the first time I saw it, I stumbled across it, it was on television, and I thought, oh, he's Dancer in the Dark, oh my goodness, oh it's Von Trier, I'm going to be depressed again. And it was years ago, and I could not keep my eyes off it. And I loved all the dance numbers, I loved every time it came, I thought they came at good times. When we can't wait for one of those numbers to come up because to take us away from... the realities of what was going on, again, it was a good time for her as well in the story to go into that fantasy world as well.
Well, I
thought that was really well done.
I think this is a film that will polarise. And I think we're evidence of that. I think Margaret and David
I remember Margaret and David's review of that. And yes, it was 5 stars and 0 stars. So I remember that very well. And I must say, I'm not Margaret in giving it 5 out of 5. You know,
well, I'm not giving it 0.
But still, I do think I'm more on her side, a lot more on her side than I was David. I think David hammered the film unfairly.
Well, this is the only one of Von Trier's films I've seen.
Yeah.
And on the back of it, I'm not likely to seek the others out. I don't mind being depressed. I just found the way he told the story was so interfering and I think disrespectful of the musical format. I don't mind challenging it.
Yeah.
And I think other films do that. I just don't think he did anything particularly clever. You want to show that the musicals escaped your contemporary life? Well, we talked about that in terms of movies last year with Purple Rose of Cairo.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dennis Potter does that so much better in things like Pennies from Heaven,
mm-hmm.
In a way that you can still enjoy while getting it, you know, about the nature of, you know, the grim nature of their reality.
Mm.
But his style for me, and I've watched other Dogma films that I really like, well, but this one is
He is getting less of that style now. I mean, he was in Antichrist, he was playing with the new slow motion cameras and doing extreme slow motion things in there. So his photography in the beginning of Melancholia, he has a beautiful opening sequence full of extreme slow motion. There's beautiful imagery. So he's trying a lot of more things visually in his movies now, except for Nymphomaniac. Nymphomaniac was a bit more going back to that Dogma style. But and I'm not saying I'm a massive fan of his. I'm not, but they do create controversy, his movies, and I'll always watch them because of that. Because I like to have an opinion on them, you know. When people say, oh, I don't like Von Trier or whatnot, but I haven't seen many of his movies, I'll say, well, you know, give him a go on his other films as well, because, you know, he's at least pushing cinema in some ways.
But why? I mean, there's so much to watch. Why should I persist with a director where I quite clearly don't like his style?
Oh, yeah, try some other ones, because he's experimenting quite a bit in his other movies. But
so if I had to watch one more, which would it be?
Don't watch The Idiots. That's one I really don't like. Breaking the Waves, don't watch that. I'd watch Melancholia. I'd watch Dogville, if that's very interesting, Von Trier. And that's another one which is very... He does something very different. It's set in a warehouse, I think. It's like a theatre piece, and all the actors are in a pretty much a theatre setting.
You said in your opening that you thought he was or could be misogynistic.
Yeah, I think he... Why? You know, well, because he's... it's the way he treats women in the movies.
So across his films?
Across his films. And that's the only question I have. I mean, yes, I can think he makes a good movie. If he did it once, I'd go, okay, you know, you've just told the story about this woman going blind and whatnot. But Dogville, Melancholia, Nymphomaniac, he tortures women in his films emotionally and has them just being put through the ringer. So I question that. And I go, why do you like seeing women treated that way in your movies? Why are you making stories that way? Yeah, I have to question it. And it does, you know.
And
whether he is or not, I still question it, because I go,
And based on one film, I get why you might say that if other films are like this. The thing I was left questioning is if he even actually understands the musical.
Yeah.
You know, there was that quote that the Selma, Bjork character, says that she loves musicals because in a musical nothing bad ever happens. Well, I think that's a very simplistic understanding of musicals.
Yeah, right.
So even going back to, you know, kind of, if you like, the classic canon.
Sure.
Like, all she seemed to watch were Busby Berkeley numbers.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas if you look at musicals like Showboat or Oklahoma, the deal with issues of prejudice, racial prejudice, and slavery in Showboat.
I can't stand Oklahoma. And
I don't mind Oklahoma, but in Oklahoma you've got the character Judd, who actually is killed, and the two main characters are actually pretty gleeful about that. So I think musicals do deal with difficult things and show bad things happening to good and bad people.
Mm.
I don't think Bjork gets that, and I really wonder if Von Trier does as well.
Yeah, well, that's a point as well. But
and that informs or kind of resonates with my appreciation of the song and dance numbers. Mm. I just don't think he understands how to film a musical.
What I'm getting over with his films is his treatment of women in them. I just think, well, do something else, because seriously, every one of them is dealing with women in a different context, okay? So, but still, again, why do you want to see women hurting so much? I just have to question that. But anyway, so I'm getting over him that way. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
So his film out of 10?
Look, I'm going to give this a 7.
Oh, I think it might go for an 8, actually. Okay.
No, I'm giving it a 7. I think it's one of his better films, and you know, I think it's not a great watch, like in terms of, you know, you're not going to have a great night out watching it, but I still think it's worth a watch.
Well, for me, it's a 2.
Mm-hmm.
Not the worst mark I've given, certainly, but it's certainly down there.
Well, Showgirls, is down, that was down
there. Yeah, well, that was a 0. Half a mark.
It was that first half.
Because I think this could have been potentially a very interesting story and a much more engaging story than I certainly found it. I think there were some really interesting things, as I said, happening filmically that could have been more of, but overall, as a musical, modern or otherwise, it just didn't work
question,
for me.
Question, though.
Yeah.
Had you heard Björk's music beforehand?
Some of it.
And, were you a fan of her or not?
Well, in fact, you know, it's funny. As the film wore on, I kept yearning to turn it off and go to YouTube and watch her song It's Oh So Quiet, mm-hmm. you know that one, mm-hmm. which is filmed by Spike Jonze.
Right.
That's terrific. But that's not her music. That was a Betty Hutton song back in the 50s. So she's taken it and she's worked with it a bit. But I really enjoyed that. But her music overall, no, I'm not the biggest fan. But I would have been okay if it had been filmed better.
I haven't bought any of her albums or anything like that, but I do like her voice. I think she's got quite a unique style, and I just think it lent itself beautifully to this movie anyway.
Well, I think her music and her performance could have worked for me if Von Trier had just taken a backward step and not tried to sort of put his hands all over it.
So the next film we are going to talk about is very current. It's still in the cinemas at the moment. It's La La Land. Greg, tell us all about it.
Well, La La Land, if you haven't yet heard of this 2016 film, well, I think you're not trying. In the story of the film, Mia, Emma Stone, is a struggling actress who meets Sebastian, Ryan Gosling, who's a struggling jazz player. They eventually fall in love and then discover that they have problems arising from their desire to find success in their chosen art form, all while singing. Their story is not told in a linear fashion, but weaves backwards and forwards, even moving into a what-if narrative at one point. So far, this may sound a little like the last 5 years, and there are certainly resonances between the two films. But this film, written and directed by the youthful Damien Chazelle, has struck a chord that the earlier film has not. One difference may be that this film is clearly a love letter to the golden age of Hollywood and the city of LA, whereas the other is mainly set in New York. Now, Ricardo, I'm really keen not to reveal the ending of this film for the sake of those who haven't yet seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ricardo, carefully, what did you think?
I was taken away by this film. I loved it a lot. I loved the performances. I loved it from the opening number in LA. You know, I think if you really love musicals and I think you'd... I know, you know what, you'd probably get into it, then but I could see why you'd probably be frustrated with it. But I connected with Emma Stone. I connected with Ryan Gosling. I connected with the characters. I connected with the world of it. Its celebration of Hollywood, which, you know, some people would probably be really, very cynical about, but I wasn't because I like LA. And so I connected with it quite a lot and I loved every moment of it. And the music was fantastic and the song and dance numbers I really loved because they were connected, again, emotionally with what they were going through. There was not much I didn't like about the movie.
And this is probably one of the rare exceptions for our podcast where you and I go into this discussion knowing what we each thought of the film, which is why we end up bringing this film into the podcast and why, in fact, we chose this theme. It was you know, drawn into by this particular film because, as you know, I was hanging out for this film. I'd seen the trailer.
Right,
it looked like a film I was going to love. And, you know, I probably suffered a bit from overhyped expectations.
Mm-hmm.
But I went in expecting to love it, and I didn't. I didn't hate it. I just didn't love it. And that was a bit uncomfortable to begin with. And then as other people went to see it, before yourself and then you yourself, who absolutely loved it, and I didn't. And it really bothered me that I didn't. And I'm still partly trying to work through why that is.
Yeah.
And again, as you know, because we're talking about it, I thought, okay, I have to go back again. Now, for me to go and see a film that's on current release twice within the space of a couple of weeks is completely unheard of.
Mm.
But I struggle to make sense of what I really think of this film. But this is what I think.
Okay.
So I think the first problem for me is the trailer. The trailer, to me, felt like it was promising something that was much more old school musical while doing some very modern contemporary things and referring back to a lot of musicals. And it did that, but it didn't do it so much. And quite a sizable part
quite,
of it.
It did it quite a bit. Well,
not enough.
Did you want it to be all song and dance?
I wanted more of it. And really? The fact that a lot of what I loved in
That's
the
what
trailer.
What I loved it wasn't about it. You know?
You know, what I loved in the trailer was a lot of that was actually in the last little bit, you know, the what-if narrative that was going on.
Loved it.
Yeah, I loved it, I thought more of the film would be like that.
Right.
And so I was a bit disappointed with that. And at the time I felt, and going back to see it, I felt even more, a lot of my problem with this film, I say I like it, I just don't love it, is the Ryan Gosling character. Oh. I think everything about the Emma Stone character pretty much works. Mm. I love her audition song, you know, Here's to the Dreamers.
Oh, Here's to the Fools Who
Dream. Yeah, I think it really works. Oh, it's beautiful. I love the fantasy scenes in the planetarium and the bits leading up to that.
Yeah.
I loved the what if story towards the end. I loved what happened at the end without actually saying what that is.
No.
I loved all the references to other musicals and there's a lot I think I just didn't pick up on. But I saw things that referred to, for example, West Side Story.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was all these things I liked, but for me Ryan Gosling didn't work. I felt it was more almost his story to complement hers. And it's funny, I feel, as I said earlier, I feel the same way about the last 5 years. And so when it got to, you know, they had the big argument scene.
I thought this was
yeah, for me, it just
superior,
didn't work.
A far superior.
Yeah, and I know you do. I know you do. But here's my theory. I think if you're someone like yourself who is involved in the craft of making dramatic art, so a performer in particular, you know, singers, actors, but potentially writers, directors and other crafts in this area, I think almost without a doubt you're going to love this film. Well, if you're someone who's a devotee of the more traditional musicals, you may love this film. You might not.
Oh, I know some people who do love the old musicals who came across it and went, oh no, and didn't like it much at all.
I think this film really polarizes people.
It really does.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I find myself floating a bit in the middle, but much more towards the positive end.
But I found a lot of people who do love it, who are not in the industry at all, and do love it. I think if you are in the industry and you have, you know, been an actor or been a director, or you have, you know, LA a little bit like that, it is, and you like LA. I think if you don't like LA and you're very cynical about Hollywood, you're going to hate it. I think you're going to really hate it because it does celebrate that. You know,
but I think
unashamedly.
I think you and I in this bit are actually agreeing. Mm. So it's almost like a Venn diagram or something. Mm. If you're the people like yourself who are involved in the craft and are devoted to the craft and want to do it well rather than, you know, just being successful, not that there's anything wrong with success, then you'll be in a subset of the group who like it. So you don't have to be of that profile to enjoy it. But if you are, I think you're probably really going to like this. Mm. But if you're not, then I think it's a bit more up for grabs as how you respond to it.
But it's not just about that, I don't think. I don't think it's just about, you know, me knowing or people knowing about, you know, the world. I don't think it's just about that.
No, not about the world, about the quest, if you like, these characters are on.
Yeah.
To make good art.
I still
and
think
do it on their own terms.
People are loving the movie even regardless of that. Okay,
but you're painting something opposite what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm saying is not that you won't like it unless you're in this group, but the flip of that.
You'll like, yeah. I
and I remember when you went to see this and you came back loving it.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really stuck in my mind was there were parts of that film that were almost directly out of your own life.
Mm.
And I think that's why I say this.
Yeah.
That I think if this resonates with your own life, it's for you, it reflects you, and that's not a bad thing.
But there's lines in there that I've heard. You know, the auditions with Emma Stone, you know, very real. You know,
do you know where the material came from?
It would have come probably from real life because
they did a lot of improv. They workshopped it.
Yeah.
So originally it was meant to be two quite different actors, and the story's flying around a bit at the moment. It was meant to be Miles Teller and Emma Watson.
Right.
Emma Watson came out of the project. Emma Stone stepped in, and because she'd already done a couple of films, including Crazy Stupid Love, Ryan Gosling, he then hooked up with it when Miles Teller fell out of it, and then they did a lot of workshopping about their own experiences and auditions, you know, trying to do a deep scene when someone's taking phone calls, for example.
Yeah, yeah. All that's real.
I think it's very much grounded in their reality, and therefore in yours.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so my problem is, you know, I should have loved this, and I just didn't.
What I loved about the what if narrative at the very end, right? I'm not going to tell you what happens at the end, but so there's a what if narrative. Now, it gives you a great sense of the realism and the fantasy, and it's all fantasy. There's a lot of fantasy, but a lot of realism within the film. But I thought the way they did that at the very end was very, very good and very well done.
And it's interesting. I saw this in two different setups. The first time I saw it in quite a large cinema that was probably about maybe half full.
Mm.
And where I think the sound projection might have been a bit off as well. That was one experience. The second time I went and saw it, I saw it at quite a small cinema that was packed. And when that thing that we're not referring to, when people realised what was happening, there was a gasp.
Mm.
And it really engaged that audience. And I wonder to what extent it was because it was a small group of people in a space, mm. you know, just a different context.
Yeah. Again, you know, if you look, comparing it to the last 5 years, let's say, La La Land was a film. I didn't feel like it was a stage show. And whereas I think, you know, the last 5 years did.
I hope this makes sense, but in my mind, the distinction is that I think that the last 5 years is a filmed musical.
Mm.
I think La La Land is a musical film.
Yeah.
And maybe I was expecting more of a musical.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of musical start, and I love that opening number in the traffic jam on the freeway.
Love it.
It was great. And
look, I don't usually get into that sort of stuff. Like I was going la 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 la. This is, I was,
and the camera
was,
work there was dazzling.
Was just
and
fantastic.
And all the way through the camera work and the lighting design, it was par excellence basically.
Yeah.
But the first part, up until the bit where you get when she decides to write her own show, and the camera kind of does that keyhole mm-hmm. shrinking effect, and then out again. Up to that point, there's a lot of music, and then the music kind of almost stops being part of the film, comes back every now and then really comes back at the end with the audition song and the fantasy sequence and so on.
Yeah.
So it is deliberately uneven. And I find Damien Chazelle actually a very interesting filmmaker. So I went back and watched his last film that did well a few years ago at the Oscars, which was Whiplash.
Yeah.
Really interesting film, and reading a little bit about him and understanding that he was, I think, a jazz drummer at one point, he very much is a musician. So the first film he made, his student film, was, I think it's called Guy and Madeline on a Park Bench. I've seen bits of it.
Mm.
That and Whiplash, and I think La La Land, very much, and I'm not a musician in the slightest, but a musical structure. So the idea of having a very vibrant start and having a more almost mellow middle part, and then kind of a rising at the end, I suspect may well be a kind of a musical structure in thought.
Yeah.
And I'll be interested to see what he does with his next film, because the next film he's making is a biopic of Neil Armstrong with Ryan Gosling.
Oh, wow.
So something that, at least on the surface of it, is well removed from the world of music. So we'll see how he does that. So I respect his... Well, I'm intrigued by his style of filmmaking. I definitely think he's someone to watch.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
I think part of my problem is that I went in with the wrong expectations and really hyped, because I was just... This was the film I was hanging out to see over summer, the Australian summer. And then it wasn't quite there for me.
I wasn't hanging out to see it.
See, I wasn't. That's the difference, I think.
Yeah, and I wanted to see it because I thought the trailer was great and I was looking forward to it. And I like the two actors. I think Ryan Gosling... I disagree with you about Ryan Gosling. I think his character does work quite well in it. I think they both do equally. But geez, Emma Stone is very nice to watch. She's a great actor. Yeah, really. I mean, look at the contrast
all the way through.
I mean, our last podcast we talked about Birdman. I mean, you look at the contrast between Birdman and
she's in both of those.
Both of those, and they're polar opposites. Those characters, completely polar opposites. So she changes. She's good at changing. So you watch her; she's different in one film to another. But you can't say that a lot about films.
Well,
I
agree. Really. I think she's extremely watchable in this, and I think he suffers a bit in comparison.
No, I disagree with that. Of course, I think he's pretty much good in everything. I think he's a very
good
actor.
I sat there the first time watching the argument scene, and I thought, I can't believe I'm thinking this, but I kind of wonder if he can act. I just don't think it worked.
Oh, really?
For me, yeah, I just didn't work. Yeah, I thought his stuff was a bit kind of Van Ordinaire. You know, I just I didn't believe him and his journey as
really?
Much. As much as hers. I just didn't.
I believed it
completely. Whereas I thought she was so good.
I think it's a near flawless film, this movie. You know what? I can't wait for this to come out on Blu-ray. I'll buy the soundtrack. I'll buy the Blu-ray.
I won't buy the soundtrack, but I will buy the Blu-ray.
Yeah, I really can't wait to own it and just watch it. You know what? The last time I felt this sort of passionate about a musical was Once. A very different movie.
Which I've only seen on stage.
You know, I really only saw that on stage. Well, when I first saw the movie in 2007, that captured... You know, I hadn't felt in a movie in a while, so I hadn't sort of... I was thinking to myself, is it just me, or was it? Why aren't I going to the movies? Why aren't I watching movies? And why aren't I connecting with them? And why aren't they connecting with me emotionally like they used to? But then when I saw Once, which was made on $150,000 with, you know, two lo-fi cams in Ireland, one best song that year at the Academy Awards. But I just connected with that. La La Land didn't connect with me as much as that, but it really did connect with me in a lot of ways. And so when I'm hearing her sing that song, "Here's to the Fools Who Dream," I think it's a wonderful, it's a brilliant song. She does it so well and connects so well with that song.
And you can really imagine the art that she sings of, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Who had been an actress, not terribly successful, but had made something of her life through her art.
Yeah.
It's funny, the last time I felt so disappointed about a film because of the trailer, I hesitate to say this, was Happy Feet. Happy Feet to me looked like a really great animated musical about the penguins all singing and doing dance numbers to, you know, well-known songs. Mm. And in fact, when I went to see the movie and you only got bits of the songs, and then this very dark environmental second half, I just walked out feeling so disappointed that maybe I have to stop watching trailers because, you know, when I'm that keyed up for a film and if it's not what I think it's going to be, I don't cope. Yeah.
Well, okay, what are you going to give La La Land, Greg?
Well, I know what you're going to give it.
What do you think I'm going to give it?
You're going to give it a 10.
No, I'm not going to give it a 10.
Well, you gave it a 10 when you first went and saw it.
Yeah, no, I'm giving it a 9.
Why? Why has it gone down?
No, I just think it's... I mean, there's a 10 you've got to save for very special, very special
films. Like It's a Wonderful Life.
Like It's a Wonderful Life. No, 10's very special. No, this one here is a 9. It's up there, obviously.
But okay, so what do you think I'm going to give it?
I think you're going to give it a 7.
Well, you know that when I first went to see it,
I
came back saying it was about a 7, and maybe I was being a little bit generous.
Yes.
I went to see it the second time, and now I give it a 1. Just kidding.
Give me a break.
No, I give it an 8.
Oh, there we go. So fantastic.
I enjoyed it more the second time.
Yeah.
I suspect, and maybe this is a function of my age, but when I get the Blu-ray out, I can watch it with the subtitles on, because I kind of felt like sometimes, particularly during the opening number, I couldn't quite catch what was being said.
Yeah.
And I said the first time I saw it, I think the audio projection was off at that first theatre. But I will watch this again. I do like it.
Yeah.
It's just that I want to love it, and I just didn't quite get there.
Yeah. Actually, when you gave it a 1 before, Greg, I thought somebody might have given you the wrong envelope.
No. God, that was bad. Did you see it?
I did. I was watching. I actually couldn't believe it was happening at the time. I thought, well, to me it was expected that La La Land was going to win. So I thought, oh, yeah, La La Land. But when that happened... And I just went, what? I've never seen anything like it.
Well, it was that sense of, you know, impending crisis, something going wrong. I mean, it pretty much did what I thought it would do in the various Oscars. You know, Best Actress, I thought Emma Stone would score that. Best Direction, Music and Song, Production Design were all things I expected. I didn't think that Ryan Gosling would win Best Actor.
No, I knew that.
I think that was given. But I did think it was probably going to win Best Picture. So it was all playing out the way that I expected. And then suddenly this whole other thing happens, which is pretty amazing.
Look, I actually thought City of Stars wasn't going to win. I thought the Fools Who Dream song was going to win.
I'm with you on that, yes. I thought it was a fine song, but not a great song.
No, I thought The Fools Who Dream actually did a lot more in the movie. But cinematography, amazing. So yes, of course. But what happened? I haven't seen Moonlight, so...
Nor I.
So it's hard for me to comment on that winning Best Picture, but that was just... I thought the producer there, Jordan Horowitz, did an awesome job, actually.
He showed such grace under pressure.
Oh, he did. I thought he did an amazing job in that situation. In fact, it just showed such great respect. They had, I think both companies and both crews had such respect for each other's work, and it just showed. It was,
and they're very different sorts of films. So it's not like, you know, we did a better musical than you did. They're just totally different films, and that's what the Academy went for. And anyway, look, you know, it was a moment that will be remembered, if not by some cherished for years to come.
You know, I think there was a lot of talk about it afterwards. I think actually it did very well for the Oscars. I think afterwards, you know, if La La Land had just won and it would have been final, Moonlight had won, you know, that would have been the surprise. But the fact that that happened, it gained so much attention with the media that I think it brought such an attention to the Oscars again that these things can go wrong. And I think it actually did a good thing for them.
I did feel sorry for Warren Beatty.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah, so did I. I don't think it was his fault altogether.
No, I don't think it was his fault, no. Full stop.
No.
Anyway, that's La La Land.
So episode 5 is coming up next.
Which is the halfway mark for season 2.
That's right. And we're going to have our Aussie episode.
Yes, we're going back to our cultural roots.
That's right. It's going to be some great Aussie films. And the first one we're going to be looking at is 1991's Proof.
We're also looking at Chopper, made in the year 2000. And finally,
2007's Romulus, My Father, which I'm really looking forward to seeing.
So these are very different films across the Australian film landscape, I guess.
Yeah, we tend to do a lot of varying different genres and whatnot here as well.
Now, you've seen Chopper and Proof, but not Romulus.
Yeah, but not Romulus.
And no. I've yet to see Chopper, so a bit of novelty for both of us.
That's right. But until next time...
Well, no, I have to give the answers to the musical quiz.
Oh, you do?
Well, let me give you the answers. So the first one you did get right, which was... What a Glorious Feeling, I'm Happy Again. Yes, that was Singing in the Rain.
Yes, great. Yeah.
Everything Free in America, For a Small Fee in America, is West Side Story.
Okay.
Yep. There's Plastic on the Furniture to Keep It Neat and Clean. Somewhere That's Green was Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay, yes, I've seen that, but I haven't seen it that many times to know that.
See, I have. Nothing Comes from Nothing, Nothing Ever Could. So Somewhere in My Youth or Childhood, I Must Have Done Something Good. You knew that you knew it. Do you know it now?
No.
We've done it on the podcast, The Sound of Music.
Is it?
The Captain and Maria, when they finally kiss in the gazebo.
Again, I've seen it once.
Have you heard... you go into the soundtracks. I sing along with the musicals. Have you heard It's in the Stars, Next July We Collide with Mars? There's people out there shouting at you. It's Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra in High Society.
Okay, well, I haven't seen High Society.
Oh, well, that's going to be our future thing. Good old Cole Porter. Touch Me, I Want to Feel Dirty.
You got that.
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I've seen that quite a few times.
We could have been anything that we wanted to be, but don't it make your heart glad that we decided the fact we take pride in to become the best at being bad. Bugsy Malone, young Jodie Foster.
Okay, I've seen that when I was little, and I've got the DVD now because I've got it.
That's what I'm saying, your Italian heritage.
Really, I quite like that film, yeah.
You got the one from Guys and Dolls, Luck If You've Ever Been a Lady to Begin With.
Yes.
Please Be a Lady Tonight.
Yes, I did that.
The one, When Dukes and Maharajas Pass the Time of Day with Me, I Say Me Special Word and Then They Ask Me Out to Tea. Mary Poppins, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, being the special word.
Oh, okay. Sure.
And finally, One Man in the Million May Shout a Bit, blah, 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 but by and large, we are a marvellous sex. Professor Henry Higgins, My Fair Lady.
Oh, jeepers, I should have actually known that.
I actually,
in 1998, I performed in My Fair Lady.
What part did you play?
I played Zoltan Karpathy.
I was in that school too.
Yeah.
I played background chorus.
Oh, right.
No, one of the very important parts.
Yeah, no, Zoltan Karpathy was an interesting character because he comes on in the midpoint at the ball and then that's it. So we was waiting around for an hour and a half to play that role, and then at the very...
I wasn't in My Fair Lady. I was in Pygmalion, where he's called Nepomuk. It's got a different name.
Right, okay.
Anyway, that's all musical trivia,
but that's
what tonight has been for me, so we hope you enjoyed it.
See you later. Till next time.